Welcome to the new season of the Awful Announcing Podcast. If you don't know my voice, my name is Dan Levy. I am back doing a podcast for people who do know my career a little bit. I did one of these for a while, then did some radio, and now I'm back. Happy to do this with the guys at Awful Announcing. You can check out all of our stuff at awfulannouncing.com. You can check out our new all sports site, pop culture, sports, why not, at thecomeback.com. We have a lot of great stuff over there and a lot of great stuff here as well. Had the opportunity with my first interview for Awful Announcing here on the podcast to talk with ESPN's Kenny Mayne, who, breaking news, just had a new contract. You'll hear more about that and what he's going to be doing throughout this very long conversation that honestly did not go or start the way that any of us perhaps expected. You'll hear the beginning of this. It just starts. There's no intro. There's no anything. He answered the phone. We started talking. And at some point, the recording began. I believe it'll pick up where he was talking about Syrian refugees and what Jesus would do, which is fascinating. And several times you'll hear Kenny say, "I don't care. Anything I say is on the record," which is refreshing and wonderful, and something you maybe don't always get from somebody who works at ESPN, nervous of what the ramifications will be. Kenny Mayne is not. He's not nervous at all. He's anything but. And it's a wonderful conversation. We thank you for clicking and downloading. And please share with your friends, neighbors, loved ones, and enjoy the conversation. Thanks so much.
It's actually a great way to look at things. Like, what would he do? I think he would wade into the water and reach out and take in these babies that are floating across the Mediterranean. I'm certain of it. So, you know, why are we, if these people advertise themselves as Christians, why would they do the opposite? Why would they not be loving? Why would they not? No.
Look, I'm not used. I mean, obviously, this is before we're even starting. But the one thing I'll say about that is, I genuinely think that as much as social media and the internet, like, I wouldn't have a career if it wasn't for the internet. I get that, but yeah. I almost think that would be better for the world. Like, not me, but like there are just too many people who have too much access to too many other people, and I think that's like I like to know if my neighbor is, you know, is wearing a white hood in his basement. That's great because I won't send my daughter over there. But I also don't need his opinions. I don't need his opinions in my life.
No, I that part absolutely. But it, I mean, if we can, I'm all for, like, it's funny because we actually, it was like a week and a half or whatever. And I actually at one point said, "Look at that. We just had a proper discourse. You and I disagreed, and then we both said what we said, and we both kind of get each other better." Like that. That's how it's supposed to work.
Right.
But usually it's just like politics. It's usually the right saying this and the left saying that. And, you know, everybody's just yelling at each other. I mean, and we politicize shit. We just had that shooting at the abortion clinic. And it wasn't 5 minutes before, you know, nobody even said rest in peace. It was just right straight to the jugular with regard to the politics of it.
Right.
So it's funny because, I mean, you can quote whatever you want. I haven't said anything I'm not embarrassed by. But it's funny because originally, like in college, and even in maybe my first 3 or 4 years, I guess, of television, I wanted to be a serious news reporter. I wanted to be the Middle East correspondent. I took all sorts of political science, and, you know, the way I grew up with my parents were both very politically minded. You know, watching the national news was like a ritual in our house. You had to shut up, you know, during Walter Cronkite or Huntley Brinkley or, you know, whoever they had on. And I still do. I watch way more serious news than I do sports.
Can I actually use this? I mean, it's my thing automatically records. Can I? You don't care if I use any of this?
You can use every word of what I'm not. I wouldn't regret anything I said. ESPN does not love us to get into politics on Twitter. Certainly, like, you're not supposed to be like, "I'm voting for," just because, you know, you don't see.
Sure.
Whatever, Lester Holt isn't supposed to go on Twitter and say, "I'm supporting Obama." You know, like, yeah, I get that. But it's kind of funny because we are, you know, we do real journalism. We also do real entertainment. We do comedy. We do, you know, we do a little of everything as a company. So it's a weird cross, you know, and ESPN has certainly, I mean, we used it as one of our slogans, the whole embrace the base.
Right.
Well, so we hire people specifically to make preposterous claims and argue about sports and talk about the Mets infield upgrade or whatever the hell the subject of the day is. But I didn't know what our last subject was. Oh, I was saying It was always my goal to, like when I fit Middle East correspondent or White House correspondent or, you know, something at a high level covering national, international news, just, it's just sort of the product of how I grew up, you know.
Let me start before the PR people who are listening to this have a heart attack. I mean, part of the reason why we sort of backed into the intro to this, but this is the first show that I'm doing for Awful Announcing. I've never done podcasts for them. You and I talked, eight years ago, where you were going back and forth through a dumpster, which was one of the greatest podcasts that I've ever had a chance to do.
I recall it. You had to remind me, but I totally remember.
And then, look, I mean, I did a radio show for a year, and now this is my first experience going back to just sort of, I'm not on a clock, let's have a free-form conversation, which is fun. And yet, part of this was orchestrated around the fact that you are re-upping your deal with ESPN, and they sent some wording around that you're going to be back doing a lot of SportsCenter stuff. Essentially, you're going to be doing what you've always done, which is whatever you want. Am I saying that fairly? I mean, you sort of have a deal at ESPN where you get to almost do whatever you want, right?
Well, they laid out in this contract and the last, they laid out, here's what we would like you to do, and then we argued about what it's worth. So 2 years ago, I guess, what year is it right now? 15. So I guess in 13, summer of 13, I had been doing seemingly whatever I wanted, because I was doing a thing called Wider World of Sports for like 3 years. I traveled the world and we did some insane stories on a, you know, horse race in the streets of Italy and bungee jumping in New Zealand and road bowling in Ireland. And I honestly think it still stands up as the best stuff I ever did in all my years there. Hopefully I haven't peaked, but I thought it turned out well. It didn't necessarily get promoted in the way we hoped. And one of the shows started at 9:41 because girls' softball ran long at 3 o'clock. It pushed us. No, for real. So that was, I'm not joking. I don't think I've ever been in TV anyway. I just was staring at the TV and I was like, this is weird. They haven't even said it's coming on. And all of a sudden it's 9:36. And I was like, oh God. I see what happened.
But Kenny, that's the good wife every week. I mean, let's be honest. It's NFL, not softball. But I mean it's,
yeah.
So you're like,
no question about it.
Juliana Margulies.
Tough moves, and you just got to roll with it. But yeah, I mean, the whole chronology way back when, you know, I got hired at 100-1 as Vince Doria, my old boss who hired me. He just retired. Great guy. He said he described me to a group of college kids. They brought me in to speak, and he said he came like 7 wide into the stretch to get hired and to ascend the way he did here. You know, speaking of me, he was saying that in a praiseworthy way, but it was very true. It was like I was selling long distance for MCI while freelancing for ESPN, and ESPN2 happened, and Keith went crazy and went back to Dan, you know, to be back on SportsCenter.
Sure.
Stewart moved up to sit next to Susie Colbert, and they needed one more guy, and that was me. So, I mean, I came in the side door without question. I beat it down until they, you know, noticed me. But, you know, obviously have done a whole bunch of other things, a lot of SportsCenter. But I didn't do SportsCenter for like 8 years. And in 2013, they said, we're scrapping all that frivolous crap, and we want you to do more, you know, meat and potatoes, stuff that matters to us. They wanted more widgets, essentially, which I take nothing away from them. It's their place. If that's what they wanted, that's what they wanted. And I have totally enjoyed going back to SportsCenter. I've done it for 2 years down in L.A., mostly with Dan and Neil, and sometimes others, like last week was Jay Harris.
Right.
And then I do a handful of feature stories, and I show up and cut a ribbon at a ceremony, and I speak at the upfront. And what else did I do? Oh, I'm going to do some road shows, like, you know, if ESPN wants me to be at the Super Bowl for 3 days or something.
Sure.
You know, like field SportsCenter's on the road, I guess you call it. So as it shapes out this contract, it's, you know, if you really look at it, it's kind of like permanent part-time. I mean, I'm certainly not showing up to a building 5 days a week. But on the other hand, I'm also not screwing around in the way probably people think. Like, I feel like I work 365 days a year. One way or the other, I'm doing something, either creating a new idea or writing something down or pitching a story or, you know.
No, but I'll be honest, and I mean this with all due respect, because I wish that I had the gig that you have. I think that sometimes. Like, what is that guy doing today? And I don't mean it in a negative way. It's just like, that must be awesome.
Well, I can report to you what I just did. Then you can see a day in life. I woke up. I drove my daughter's car to get gas. She was, like, so below empty. There isn't even a letter for it. I mean, it was, like, there's nothing at all. We had to go up a steep hill to got them hot chocolate and a latte. So I was a good dad this morning. Shipped them off to school. They're both in high school, my two daughters. Then I started getting on the phone, like, pretty early. I was making a setup for a story I'm going to shoot. It's not for a couple weeks. We're going to shoot a story about American Pharoah.
Oh, wow.
And his impending sex life.
Sure.
And so it's going to be a real story, but obviously, I mean, there's something funny about a horse retiring to go have sex every day. There's just something funny about that. Now, it's very serious to the breeders. You know, they're going to make a lot of money, and it's very important. You know, he's going to pass along his genes to all these future runners. Hopefully it works out. But we're going to find a way to do it in a curious way, I hope.
Yeah, that might be the...
I was working literally like 90 minutes. I set up my hotel and flights and, you know, calling the producer and calling the farm. And so I've been, you know, that's been what I've done so far today.
And it's funny because that sounds like the Kenny Mainest story ever. And yet it's good to know, because when you see that, however many weeks from now, you'll think, well, that's a really cute story. And I would never, I mean, I would think of it because I'm in the industry, but the average person wouldn't think of how much work you had to go through to do that. It's going to be just a sort of a fun, quirky thing that will be hilarious and sort of in the vein of what people know you for. But you're right. None of us will ever think of how much work it took to set that whole thing up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to pre-write a bunch of it. I'm not going to come with a list of questions necessarily. But I was just talking to a friend who helped me. He's in the horse racing industry, and he's the one who helped me get to the farm, you know, set up the interview and all that. And I was just giving him, I was talking off the top of my head, like, how the interview will go. So he was getting, you know, the angle that I'm going to go with. And there's some, like, real questions that we're really going to get the answers. Let me start that again. There's some real information we're really going to pass on, but we're going to do it in... not a standard way. It's not an industry story about breeding and how great this horse is and his bloodline. It's going to be silly questions. You know, do horses ever fall in love? I mean, I want to know. Or how many times do they do it? Because, you know, do they bring them 10 times a day, or is it once a week? Or I'm sure every horse is different based on how they perform.
Of course, but, of course.
I love American Pharoah, and I think the farm, rightly so, had some jitters about, oh, God, let's, you know, here comes this guy, what the hell are you going to do with our horse? Because one scene I envisioned, and I'm kind of glad they killed it, actually, because I think it's a funnier story if it comes off more like something on The Daily Show than just a preposterous pretend story. Like, I have done many of those, too, where we just told people what to say.
Right.
We did that for the NFL for, like, 10 years. Week by week, I would write a script on Tuesday or Wednesday, and we'd fly there, and we'd tell Tom Brady, here's your line, and try it again. Hit that word better, you know, like, that's how we did it.
Out of context, though, that was the greatest line I've ever heard. I know what you mean, because I love those pieces that you used to do, but out of context, that was an amazing line.
Yeah, I mean, I totally enjoyed that period, and I don't think I would have done it any other way, but there's something to be said for not doing the make-believe part of it, but yet getting really silly with them, the body of doing it straight. You know, more or less right, how right. I do sports art. I do, you know, I convey the nice sporting news every time, try to get all the names right. And actually my percentage is pretty high for not doing it very often. But, you know, when you screw it up, you fix it, or you make fun of yourself, well, or whatever. You know, you can't know every hockey guy. It's impossible.
And I do not. You mentioned prepared questions, so let me ask you one that I had prepared, because I feel like it's important and I don't want to forget about it. And it brings up what you just mentioned, the idea of SportsCenter. Having done SportsCenter for as long as you have, in and out, the ESPN release says you were gone for 5 years. You mentioned eight, but whatever it is, it's a different world now with Twitter and with Vine videos and periscoping, you know, live events and press conferences. So when you sit down at the desk, do you prepare differently because you know everyone's already seen those highlights? Or do you prepare differently hoping that maybe the people who are still watching SportsCenter, it's not that audience that has seen it already?
Firstly, let me just clarify. Yeah, I'm almost sure it was 8 years. You say seven, but it wasn't five.
Okay.
But I started doing it again 2 years ago. So I've done it for two. I've been back for two, and now I'm doing two more years that I signed up for. October 1st was my anniversary date. Honestly, I don't know that I give it all that much thought. I honestly, every single show, it's sort of like a doctor's creed, you know, first do no harm. Like, you try to be correct. Being correct is your number one goal. Never F up anything if you can help it, you know. And, of course, we're all human. We all make mistakes.
Right.
You know, you're going to butcher a name, or you're going to say the guy had 20 rebounds when it was really 21, or, you know, those kind of mistakes, and you fix them in the rears. But the way that Twitter has impacted me is beneficial if you can stand reading people who hate you. We have our phones on during the show, you know, on silent. And I just got help the other night. Somebody gave me bad information, and they said Darren Sproles carried the ball, and it wasn't Darren. It was DeMarco. It wasn't even Darren Sproles. But in the moment, you know, I hadn't seen the cut until I did it live.
Sure.
I just glanced at my notes, Darren Sproles, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out it wasn't Darren Sproles. They don't even look alike. One guy's much shorter.
Yeah, so, very different body types.
Some guy, and in fact, it's funny, one guy, only one out of 330 million people said, hey, you idiot, it was not Darren Sproles. And so I called my producer and said, hey, look at that tape. Did we screw that up? Turns out the guy was right. So here's this guy, and I thanked him on Twitter, and I'm going to send him a hat. I said, thank you for correcting me. You receive a hat.
Wow.
So I got to find a hat. other times, people just say stuff like, I hate Kenny Mayne. He's the worst person ever. Then you don't respond to that. But you just don't worry about it. But, yeah, I think Twitter has been – it's like an extra researcher to do our shows better, because you're going to have the kid who goes to North Dakota State and in top plays when we show all those miscellaneous plays that, you know, come out of nowhere. Right, we'll show a spike in a southwestern Louisiana volleyball game. None of us, not one of us, knows one person on either team playing. But some guy goes to school there and says, "That's not how you say your name. It's actually Smite, not Smith, or whatever the case."
Sure, right? Yeah.
So I don't look at Twitter as a bunch of detractors. I kind of look at Twitter as being our savior in some cases, and it was just proven last week. You know, we got Sproles out of there for the next show and set it the right way.
Look, it's a great way to look at it. And I think that you have a far different outlook than a lot of other people in our industry who look at that kind of quote unquote feedback as a negative. But you've always had that personality. You've always sort of been the likable guy. Even when people may not like your shtick, you're okay with it. It just sort of rolls off your back, which is probably why some of those people don't like you.
Well, it's funny. I think I've probably don't admit to it as much. Like we're all human. You want to be liked as opposed to disliked. So if there is some guy, and you could have a bad show, or maybe try a joke that you know wasn't even that great, and somebody crushes you for it, and you want to, I've responded like, you're right, dude, I sucked. You know, like I'll agree with the guy, actually. Like, yeah, that was terrible. But more often, I'd say 90% of the time or more, somebody that doesn't like me, and not bragging, but that's a, you know, of all my Twitter feed, it's not a very high percentage that write hateful things toward me. So I just, whatever. I've also called security twice. So those who crossed that line, I didn't go full shilling on anybody, but definitely there were a couple of instances where I didn't appreciate how the guy conveyed it, and it bothered me enough to tell our security. So I did.
By the way, did you say that to me because you know it was me, or is that just like a thing people throw around? Because you know that hit my inbox. Right? You know that, right?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I knew nothing. I was saying that as a figure of speech. Like, I wasn't a put down on shilling either. It was, I meant, hate the guy.
It's become a term. It was a fun time for me. That Twitter experience was very
fun. No, I honestly, no clue.
Speaking of that, and I'm not going to go into that, but it does dovetail into a sort of larger conversation. Robert Flores said the other day, the comment about, people are mad about Cam Newton dancing and people aren't mad about Travis Kelce dancing. And the reason was because, and he yelled it into the camera, because Cam Newton's black. And some people, for some reason, refuse to agree with him, which he's absolutely right, saying, no, it's because quarterbacks are held to a higher standard. You being a former college quarterback, it's because he's black. Right? I mean, like this is one of those sort of Twitter turns into real life conversations. And where I say before, not everyone needs to have an opinion shared. we're mad at one guy for dancing and not for another. It seems pretty, and I'll use the term loosely, black and white on this one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hear Robert Strange. Like, there's stuff that happens that could have been a headline across the whole world, and I missed it. I didn't hear his comment on that, so I missed that entirely. But I've been on Cam's side without regard to color, more regard to, man, they're doing well. He's clearly having fun. Seems like a good guy. I've never met him. I don't care if he dances. Get him out of the end zone. He'll stop dancing. Right. Like, I take his message as what we should be talking about. Like, yeah, if I keep me out of the end zone, I'll stop dancing.
Yeah, I mean, look, so, I wrote this the other day. The man almost died a year ago, December 10th. He almost, basically, yeah, a year ago, he almost died in a car accident. If he wants to dance after scoring a touchdown, the fact that he even can, I think we should be applauding that.
Absolutely. No, I'm clearly on Cam's side on this. I said it last week on SportsCenter and on Twitter both, and I didn't bring it up as a black-white issue. I just brought it up as a human issue. Just simply, the guy plays with great joy. He seems to be having fun. Who cares if he dances? I don't care. If he wants to dance, dance. If he doesn't dance, don't dance. You know, we have guys who celebrate. I root for the Seahawks. I live up here. I'm from here. We have guys who celebrate a certain way, and we have other guys who just drop the ball. And, you know, whatever you do, you do. I think there is something beyond the black and white that you started to touch on about the relevance of the quarterback position. That maybe there is something, you know, they're supposed to behave in a certain way that conveys their leadership and their quarterback, and you handle yourself in a certain way. But on the other hand, that's totally unfair because there's all sorts of quarterbacks who do huge arm pumps and scream and throw their hands up as a touchdown signal. Well, that's their dance. So Cam happens to do his dance. So I don't know. I mean, I definitely believe there are plenty of black and white things that, you know, we haven't come together on as a country very well. Witness, we're still taking down Confederate flags. So
yeah, right. Well,
yeah, I'm with the North.
Well, and the other part of what made what Robert Flores said notable is that in his, and it wasn't a long rant, it was just a quick thing, I think, as they were going to break on SportsCenter, and he said, everybody talks about this, First Take talks about, he mentioned another ESPN show on SportsCenter, which was sort of fascinating that he called them out. And that one, I wanted to ask you, because again, you have no problem calling anybody out, which we all appreciate, but it makes me wonder, you put that in context of people mentioning, you know, a lot of the, and look, there's good stuff on every site, on every show. I don't want to just cast a huge wide brush, but there are a lot of issues with people in my line of work with some of the shows on ESPN. First Take is one of them. But for someone who works there, do you get angrier when we go after that kind of stuff, the lowest common denominator stuff that's on the same network as you? Or do you get angrier when people leave ESPN, your Dan Patricks, your Bill Simmons, your Jason Whitlocks, and just come back, Colin Cowherd, and come back as hard as they can on how horrible the experience was for them in pockets here and there when they made their name. They made millions of dollars at the place you've worked for however many years. It's sort of an either or both. Which of those, or do they both annoy you differently?
I don't think any of it bothers me in the least. It's free speech. The only thing I ask for is people do it with better decorum, both for people who are celebrated, you know, who have this voice and this platform, and those who are more anonymous but just are typing hateful words. So I think that's the only thing when you're talking about social media and people's reactions and things people type, I just wish we did it in a more respectful way, period. Like, I don't understand. Like, it goes back to what we're talking about, challenging. I was looking at somebody just the other day, somebody's feed. I was looking at one thing and it kind of led me to look at more. I was like, damn, why are you wasting your time? And you just sound like a curmudgeon here. Like let it go. The guy has four followers.
I know.
And you're blasting him as though it's it's like a high debate or something. Like, I think what it is simply, and there's another one. There's a couple that are personal issues for them probably. So I don't even want to, characterize it as opposed to naming it.
Sure.
Somebody admitted, you know what? I'd had a bottle of wine and I just let go, you know, not me speaking, this is somebody else. And so, well, they're explaining it. Don't text and drive, or don't drink and drive, or don't Don't drink and text.
That's not funny yet. Definitely don't drink and drive. But I get where you're going.
Yeah, on. I don't drink. I have a glass of wine with my girlfriend occasionally. I don't really drink, so I don't have that problem. But I just kind of like shake my head at most of it and ignore it. I'm pretty boring. I like Washington Week in Review. I like Frontline. I like sober, serious discussions about important issues. Not trying to sound all high and mighty here, but that's what I watch.
Do you not realize how sort of the cross section of how strange that sounds to someone who sees how you sort of present yourself on TV? And look, you're not a jokester in a way, but you do it in such a dry way that is almost always funny. You can play the straight man.
But I think the explanation for the reason for it was right there. It's like somebody asked me a while back on an interview like this, I just plainly said, and I meant it, I take serious things seriously and less serious things less seriously. So if I'm doing a Warriors highlight, and God bless them, they've won, you know, all these games, and Steph Curry's amazing, and I know him, he's a great guy. But if I'm doing their highlight, I'm not going to, like, kill myself to out-praise them. You know, it feels like whatever the flavor of the moment is, you know, everybody's in a dogfight to lavish. I mean, I'm tripping on myself here, but just think 6 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago, Green Bay was invincible.
Right.
It was clear they were winning the NFC. Brett Favre is the greatest quarterback ever. And now they've lost 4 out of 5, and everybody's turning on them and debating them on all these shows and talking about what's wrong and bringing up his girlfriend. You know what I mean? It's just all such bullshit. It's like if Green Bay had won that game on Thanksgiving, and James Jones probably should have caught the ball. I like James Jones, but I think he should have fought for it a little harder. Let's say he catches up, or any of 10 other players, you know, don't put it all on him. We would have been talking if he had pulled off that last drive. It would have been this freaking 40 minutes of Brett Favre night, Aaron Rodgers replicates the guy he succeeded and right. The comeback. And you know what I mean? That's where we would have gone with that show. Okay, James Jones doesn't catch the ball, so now we're going to go to hell with what's wrong with the Packers. He's mortal. You know what I mean? It's just
right. No,
it's so fickle. It's so fickle, and that's why I think I just look at sports as sports, and I love football, and I love horse racing, and I know the other sports a bit, and I cover them to the extent that I know them, and, you know, you only got to pull off 48 seconds most of the time. And I just don't take it all that seriously. Like, I totally appreciate and admire great athletic skill and, you know, the hard work. I mean, totally, I'm down with that. But team one plays team two, and then team three plays team four, and you're just trying to get through a show without screwing up. So I don't take myself seriously, and I don't take the show seriously, and I don't even take Golden State winning 500 games in a row that seriously. Like, all right, somebody put a stat out today about Steph Curry. He's going to have so many threes. He's already, what does he have, like 150 more threes than the next closest guy or whatever?
Something like that.
And my comment was, pass the ball. So clearly I was being facetious, right? I'm not, I don't really mean, but,
right.
You know, that's just how I look at it. It's just guys and girls playing sports.
Well, look, and that's fair. I think there are other people who look at it differently, and I've had this debate whenever
I'm certain of that. Yeah.
Well, you know, all right, that was stupid of me to say, but whenever real life happens, I always have the benefit. In the last 4 jobs I've had, I've been sort of the scandal guy. So when something breaks, I have, I guess, an ability to write about things in real enough terms to explain it to people or share my opinions in a way that seems palatable. So I've sort of carved out a niche as the scandal guy. So if Lance Armstrong happens or Ray Rice happens or people come to me and say, all right, put this in perspective. So I feel like I'm looking at sports differently. You're looking at it from a standpoint of it's sports, it's fun. I look at it a standpoint of I'm watching the Cowboys on Thanksgiving and Greg Hardy makes a tackle and I have this sort of internal strife because that's what I've been conditioned classically to think about now. And maybe that's my own fault. And I'm not saying I don't enjoy it. Look, I eat chicken nuggets. I'm not saying I don't enjoy it, but it's just difficult.
Absolutely. Sometimes. We have different roles and therefore different perspectives when you know, I'm just there to pull off a show and I hope make it entertaining because otherwise, and like you said earlier, everybody already has the results. Right, you can get the game feeds. You got all these channels, and in the old days, SportsCenter would come on, and it isn't that long ago when people literally had no idea unless they had access to the AP wire no clue who won these games right. until the moment we showed you. So we were unveiling this brand new information, doing it hopefully colorfully. But now, you know, games are over. We don't even bother with the old lead-ins. We used to do the old, you know, here comes team A against team B, and who knows who won this game, and then we would reveal it in the final frame. Now we just come out and say, Warriors won again, and then we show it, you know.
Yeah.
So by definition, we damn well better do it in somewhat of an interesting way, or why bother watching us at all?
Are you amazed, or in any way, just sort of sitting back, and I feel like this sounds like a career retrospective conversation, which I'm not trying to do, but just looking at where everything is, the fact it's social media and the fact that there's four other channels at other networks that are competing with you now. When you go back to when you started at ESPN, do you ever think, I cannot believe there are this many people who are now doing this for a living? Because I do it for a living. I'm amazed at it.
I can take it back more than that. I went to UNLV, and my first year was 1979. I redshirted that year. And I remember watching the beginning. I don't know if I watched the first show, but I watched early on. Here's this thing called ESPN. And in the middle of the night, they'd go to the business channel, right? They couldn't even fill 24 hours. And I distinctly remember saying, here's a guy who played Division I football, you know, played football all my life. And I was like, who the hell wants to watch 24 hours of sport? Like I was saying that. And I'm somebody who plays sports. I thought it was stupid. And then, you know, I'm flipping over watching the news. So I didn't even have an interest back then to think that it was ever going to be what it became. Now we have 29 channels, and there's, like you said, all the competition against us and the internet. And the other funny thing, when I first started at ESPN, it was 94. And the quote-unquote internet, it was a really new thing. Like, you know, I remember my old TV station in Seattle, somebody did a story about what is the World Wide Web. That was the title of the story. That was probably, what, mid-80s or, you know, whenever the hell took off. But I didn't have a laptop. I didn't have a smartphone. I didn't have a cell phone. I had a pager. And I would get a page, and I would go to a payphone or a regular phone and call ESPN to hear my assignment or call in. So when I got to ESPN, we had a bank of computers. You know, ESPN looks nothing like it did back then compared to that little three-building place, you know, with a cafeteria vending machine. That was it. And there was a bank of computers on floor two, I think it was, three or four computers. And there were these guys. I didn't know. I knew one of them a little bit. I'm forgetting his name now. I should know. And that was their job. They were scanning the quote-unquote internet, and we used to give them shit. We would come by, hey, have fun with the internet. You know, like we were literally making fun of whatever this thing is these guys are doing. You know, and it's just laughable now because obviously I had no foresight for it. But yeah, I mean, it's a kind of a circular conversation because it really does take you to the fact that everybody has the info at this point. 2 weeks ago, this is a totally, totally different, much more serious matter, obviously, when the attack happened in France.
Sure.
The attacks happened in France. I came home from a road trip that day, and my sister called, did you hear what happened? And I had no idea because I had been flying. So I'm driving, and when I pulled over, I went to Twitter. I started hearing about, you know, what was going on. And I got into my house and didn't have my kids that day. So I was going to turn on the news and follow what was going on. It turned out cable was out for whatever reason. There was an outage in my neighborhood, so I didn't have TV for like 6 hours. And I sat on my couch in the dark and followed the events in France. And I mean, it just illustrates,
sure, yeah,
you know, the immediacy of your little iPhone, what it brings the whole world to you. And you can end up getting in conversations with people all around the world. You know, was a very heavy issue, and we're talking about all these light issues, but...
No, but similar, yeah, but different.
It's pretty crazy. It's a new world.
That same night, we were out at a restaurant, and there was a TV on, and they had the news channel on, so I'm keeping an eye on it, and I'm on my phone, and my wife is looking at the TV, telling me, you know, updated numbers and stuff, because obviously there's a sports connection to it, so I mean, that's obviously a human interest, but you know, with happening at the game and whatnot, I'm trying to keep track of it, and I'm looking on my phone and getting updated numbers that TV doesn't even have, and I understand they have to go through and verify things and whatnot.
Exactly, because TV, you think about it, you were talking earlier about what it takes to put together even a little story on American Apparel. There's all this legwork and prep, and you got to get there and set up. And it's the same thing for a TV show. You know, they had to have had a meeting. They had to have typed up scripts. They have a producer in the guys here. They will they will hot change. Hey, we're going live to, you know, France right now. And you just cut to the satellite and say, we're now showing you a live picture, blah, blah, blah. But you're right. Twitter is faster. You know, it's like speed of sound and speed of light argument, you know, right? It's one is TV is almost old fashioned to that sense. Not that TV doesn't have still a great power and great value, but you can't do TV as fast as you can type on Twitter. There's no question about it.
Exactly.
And it's funny because when Twitter first broke out, ESPN, you know, and this isn't a knock on ESPN at all. ESPN had to figure out a way to protect its brand versus having a bunch of renegade idiots on Twitter, because we had some people who unwisely would jump on Twitter and break a story that they actually should have called the assignment. Hey, guess what? I just heard so-and-so got traded. But they wanted to be first, you know, that competition.
Oh, yeah.
And so
oh, yeah.
ESPN had to constantly set and revise and reset rules. What's allowable? What can we do? Can you check what, you know? And for a while, it was silly. It was like they wanted us to literally, like, check. Hey, can I say this? This is, you know. And a lot of us kind of rebelled against it and, like, whatever. I think I know what I haven't even been punished in 21 years. The worst thing I've done is I didn't read an ESPY skit the way they wanted me to and kind of went off the rails when it came time. That's a long story. I'm one of the good guys. Like, I don't get in trouble. I don't do things, bad behavior in the office or out of the, you know, like I might be a little bit of a wild card once you stick me on live TV, but
sure.
I think I know where the line is most of the time. And I think at this point, ESPN simply is like, they just hope we do the right thing. Like, there ain't much other way to say it, because how can you make a rule for every situation? There may be a time where it makes more sense for one of our guys to get on Twitter and be the first if he really knows he just heard that this just happened. Honestly, that might benefit ESPN better than the laborious way of calling in, hey, set up a live shot, send a satellite truck. Well, now we're 3 hours behind.
Right, yeah.
So I think ESPN has gotten wiser. You know, that's an unenviable position for them to figure out, well, what is the rule? How do we tell people to behave? And like you were saying earlier, how people now call out other people on other shows. I can't remember doing that precisely that way myself, but, you know, ESPN sort of invited it, right? We have these shows where the whole point of the show is to engage in debate and say,
oh my gosh,
somewhat saucy thing that started conversation to get us attention, to get us viewers, and, you know, that's the point of the exercise, right?
My belief is that if and look, it's First Take, it's Fox has 10 shows like this now, it's NBC's. If those shows don't get traction on Twitter or social media, I genuinely think that they're freaking out, the producers or the hosts, and you're chasing it. And look, I've done it. I mean, I've written things, and when I was at Bleacher Report, Awful Announcing, wherever, where I'm looking and I'm just sort of hitting refresh, like, why isn't this becoming viral? This is a big thing. Why? And you just get so caught up in the, why don't people either love or hate me? No opinion is the worst. Love me or hate me, but if you have no opinion of me, I've done something horribly wrong.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it goes back to what I was just saying, that if there were a guiding rule about behavior or what you can or should or shouldn't say, it's just kind of like, you know, have good judgment. Like, and then that will guide you. That kind of goes for everything, doesn't it? You know, like,
well, yeah, do the right thing. As a human, yes.
And occasionally, you know, I've gone too far, and I even apologized for one. It was years and years ago. 2008, I think it was. And I said something, and I didn't mean it at all in the way it came off, because if you read my preceding 10 tweets, in my head, everybody's following my little storyline, right? Because you think,
right,
you know, it's not true, though. Somebody just clicked on, they just go to the top. So if they saw the one that I wrote as my number 11 tweet, it could have been looked upon as, God, what a dick. When, in fact, if you looked at my 10 preceding tweets, it totally made sense, and it was very light, and it was really nothing.
Oh, that's light.
But I still get...
I wrote an article about how I think you should do an 8-team college football playoff, because my thought is good football is great and better football is better. I mean, more good football is better. So why not do more teams? I had a 15-tweet back-and-forth debate with a guy who could not stop telling me I was wrong, and at the end of it he said, thanks, I'll go read your article now.
Well, I think it's a lesson. We're losing the fight. At times, it seems we're losing the fight on having proper discourse. And, like, I think engaging in debate is great. yelling at each other serves very little purpose, and I just don't have time much for it. So when I see that type of stuff, if it's directed at me, I'll usually just kind of move on to the next one. I might look and find out who said it, and you have a little more info. Well, oh, as it turns out, that person wrote 26 of those in a row to various other people and attacked them. So maybe the guy had a bad day. But
all right, let me.
It's just, I always say on Twitter, or don't always say, I often say, it's like there'll be an argument about what, and I'll just end it with, it's just Twitter. We're just typing here. Like, what? That's like the hashtag thing, which I make fun of.
Right.
I call it hash marks. And I think I've only officially done a hashtag, with a little number sign. I think I've done that like 3 times because it was for money. I was doing a commercial and they asked me, put up the post and do the hashtag to the name of our company. That's the only time and I usually still make fun of that. Because my point is, after we do the hashtag, then what? What happens? Tell me what happens next.
Well,
no one can explain it.
In that regard, yes, but you can track those things. For example, I want to finish on one thing after this, but my son had a surgery. Ironically enough, this week is a big deal for us. He's going to be in the Iron Man comic this week. Brian Michael Bendis is putting him in Iron Man. He gets to meet Iron Man. It comes out Wednesday. So for people who are looking for something to read, go to your local comic shop. You can see I'm in it too, which is kind of weird. But anyway, so we did a hashtag for him that was Iron Max the day that he had a surgery. The reason we called it Iron Max, he had a port put in his chest. And when I sold it to him, I said, that scene in Iron Man where he has the metal disc in his chest and he pulls it out. I said, that's what you're going to be. And he was 4 years old at the time. And he said, I get to be Iron Man? And I was like, yeah, yes, you do. And that became a thing. So the day of his surgery, we use the hashtag and people at Marvel and other. So there's benefits to it.
I can understand. My point is, it's like the truth of it, though, is in the main, most people do that because they want to join something.
Yes,
they want hey, look, I was part of this thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's why, like, the democratization of it all, that's a great thing. We all get, you don't have to be on TV or you don't have to be a noted writer or whatever to have a voice. Anybody can have a voice. So that part of it, I think, is actually great. I just wish we did it more respectfully.
Well, I agree with that. Last thing for you, because we could talk for 3 hours, but I want to let you go. And it's your Wikipedia page. So I want to read you your Wikipedia page.
I know all about it.
I
don't know how that happened. But you do your thing.
I just want to see if any of this is right. Because I actually know a little bit of your history and your bio. Again, we've talked
Very little, and it could change any minute.
This one. So under sports career, a native of Hawaii, not true, was an honorable mention junior college All-American long snapper in 1981 at New Mexico State. Also not true.
Not true.
You graduated from University of New Mexico, which, again,
not true.
Not even continuity with the other school you played long snapper.
We played New Mexico, although I think that was my redshirt year. Did I play them the next year? I can't remember. So this is funny because I brought this up on Twitter way back when Twitter first started, and Wikipedia really hadn't been around that long either. And I think I wrote something about just how ridiculous is it that anybody can write anything about anyone, and now that's on Wikipedia.
It's still up there.
I had my producer. I remember where we were. We were at a Patriots game or a Green Bay game. I forget. No, I guess I don't remember. But we were at a game for sure. And I said, hey, put on Wikipedia that I invented the sun. Let's see how long that holds. So Matt goes in. I didn't know how to go on to Wikipedia. He goes in. He puts Candyman invented the sun in 1964. He felt that there should be a ball of gas that would heat the earth or whatever I told him to say. And that stayed up for like a week. And then somebody challenged that, and they're correct. I didn't invent the sun.
They were correct.
But more recently, I don't know why it happened, and I'm not upset about it. I think it's kind of funny. It's just like a sport for creative writing.
Yeah.
And I don't know who these people are who are doing it, and I don't really care, but I applaud their creative writing. And now it's just a thing.
I applaud the fact that you were assigned as a free agent with Carolina Panthers, a team that did not exist when you graduated from college.
I really was a free agent with the Seahawks out of college. I was only second string at UNLV. I only started one game. Broke my leg my first year playing there, like midway, and then I came back and played next year and I was second string again. But I was good enough that my coach said to the Seahawks, hey, the guy that you wanted is going somewhere else. Sam King is his name. He went up to Canada. And said, if you like him, you'll like the other guy. He almost could have been the starter, too. So I went up and threw for the Seahawks. I got to throw to Steve Largent.
Nice.
During my tryout at the old Seahawk complex, the original one on the lake. And somehow or the other, they actually gave me a contract. I signed whatever it said. Didn't matter what it said. It could have said free. I would have signed that too. I think it was 35, 40, and 45. And no bonus. And so I went to training camp. And I got to work out for like 3 weeks in Kirkland. But I went to training camp over in Cheney, which is on the other side of the state. And on day one, they put me on this damn test, which I seriously did not know I was being tested about my ankle. I thought it was just like, you know, standing broad jump or, you know, whatever, you know, vertical leap, something.
Right, right.
And so I was, you know, Mr. Hustle there trying to kill the thing. If I had known, I would have cheated the hell out of it. I would have gone easy on my good leg and hard on my bad leg. But instead, the variance between the two was such that they're like, you're out. So I got cut the morning of day one. Never even got to go out. And then for like 3 years, I just wouldn't give up. Because I kept seeing these other idiots sign contracts with various NFL and USFL teams that I'd thrown with. And I was like, what's once? And then a couple of phone calls. Like, I have 20 phone calls to make. Right now I have 18 to go because I've done two. So, like, there could be a thing that happens, and they'll just say, hey, sit on your couch and call us, and you'll be on the radio, or you'll be on the phone, but on TV. So it's a
cool.
unusual deal. But I get to live in Seattle and here with my daughters. And my girlfriend lives across the country, so I'm always on the move one way or the other. I'm either flying to see her to see me, going to a story, going to LA, or being with my girls.
Well, look, I appreciate you taking the time today to talk. I mean, I had no idea how this was going to go. I had stuff written down. We got to maybe half of it, but this was more fun. Not quite going back and forth to the dumpster, but in some ways, a lot more rewarding. So thank you so much.
I'm good. I'm not in as big a hurry as you think, but if you got to wrap up, then I think we definitely got a bunch covered. So whatever you want.